T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Don't you just feel better hearing it?
I mean,
no offense to, you know, ACC fans. I'm sure there are here, some here because of Syracuse. No offense to Big 12 fans, but come on. Now it feels like college football. The SEC is back this weekend. You look at the matchups on the schedule and now you see, oh, look, ranked teams are playing. So we will continue taking your calls on the Bills and what you feel good about in the 2-0 start, what you're concerned with going into Game 3 Sunday. 803-0550. We have phone lines open. Love to hear from you. Talk Bills football with us. We'll get to the fantasy football at the bottom of the hour, but we're going to the Western Hotline right now. Bill Bender, Sporting News, joining us because the SEC's back. Maybe the Pac-12 will decide to come back. Mac fans here in town, we might be seeing UB football again this fall if the Mac votes this weekend to return. Bill, it's Howard and Brayton. Thanks for coming on with us this morning. Good morning.
Yeah, Howard, and I'm a Mac grad too, so as an OU alum, hoping they get back on the field this fall in some fashion. We'll see if they do.
So like I said, no offense to the other Power Fives, but I'll be honest with you. Like, I have really not felt it was college football season yet. I've taken a peek every now and then. I'm looking at some games, but Saturday just doesn't feel the same. Now I begin to get that feeling with the SEC coming back this weekend.
That's fair. I mean, you get into it now, and obviously the SEC is back. There's, like you said, a lot of ranked games on the schedule. I think we have 3 matchups between ranked teams. The last 3 weeks felt a little bit like, week 0. In a lot of ways. There was a game or two you'd dial into, but not like this weekend. And, I live right in the heart of Big Ten country, so it's just staggered. It's weird. There's going to be more cancellations. It's the world we're living in right now.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I thought I saw the number was 20 or 21 games postponed. Notre Dame went on the list this week, Bill. So as you have watched this play out, I wasn't sure they were even going to be able to play any games this season in college football. How do you think it's gone to this point, handling the virus, getting the games, all that stuff that's happened?
Well, it's just going to have to come down to each week. I think 6 of the 15 teams in the ACC this year have had a game moved around or postponed. The SEC hasn't started. There's been, like you said, that laundry list of games that's gotten moved around. It makes for a lot of logistical hurdles. I think it's waiting to see until the end. How many games did every conference get in? It's not going to be equal. It's going to lead to some crazy playoff arguments if we get to the playoff, and then we'll have to go from there.
Yeah, you took one of my questions. Yeah, if you were on the CFP, if you're on the committee, how do you handle this? Because you will have leagues, you will have teams that aren't playing the same number of games. How does that all shake out when you're trying to figure out the 4 best teams?
Oh, we'll figure it out. I mean, we did this before the BCS where we split national titles and, you had all that, the things that I try to explain to my 9-year-old son about split national titles between, Miami and Colorado and Nebraska and Michigan and USC and LSU, and then maybe there'll be some of that element to it. I think one of the things is going to be the number of games played and how many each conference does. And, we'll go from there. I still think it's not going to be that hard to figure out that Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and Oklahoma have pretty good teams.
Do you think, still on the CFP angle, do you think it is harder or easier when essentially we're talking mostly in conference games? You're mostly playing against your own as opposed to some of the typical, the big marquee crossover matchups we might see in the month of September.
I think the SEC will probably crow about it the most because they're playing 10 and they have the toughest conference. I always judge. I don't judge conferences top to bottom typically. I more judge them on, okay, how many legitimate playoff caliber teams does this conference have, if that makes sense. And the SEC probably has five, maybe six. If you look at LSU, Auburn, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, I can picture any one of those five being in the playoff. The Big Ten has like one and a half, and the Big 12 has two, and the ACC has one, maybe two. So I think those are the arguments that come to play for me at the end. But I don't, you know, not everybody looks at it the way I do. That's what's so subjective about that process.
Bill Bender with us from Sporting News. So we know the SEC's coming back. We know the Big Ten's coming back. What's the latest on the Pac-12? We'll hear something this weekend, you think?
Sounds like it. Sounds like the MAC might get back in action. The Mountain West might try it, and they'll play abbreviated seasons as well. So I don't know how, but, you know, this is the whole argument. How would a 6-0 Oregon team stack up against a 7-1 Ohio State team versus a 10-1 Florida team? And these are the arguments we're going to have at the end of the year that are, they're going to be confusing, but, I mean, the way I've kind of looked at it is at least we'll be arguing about football at that point. And there's a long way to get there. And the biggest thing I'm worried about, obviously, is it just this trend of teams playing a game. Notre Dame, I'm not singling them out because other schools have had this happen too. They've played for 2 weeks. They had fans in the stands. And then 2 weeks later, they're not playing because of COVID cases. It's going to be really tough to regulate.
Yeah. I haven't been, you know, watching enough in terms of the whole how the games look and sound with limited number of fans. We've gone through it with the NHL with no fans in the bubble and the NBA bubble, some NFL fans at a handful of stadiums. How do you think it has looked and sounded in the college football games that you've been watching?
I mean, it's all right. I mean, I watched that week that Clemson played Wake and last week with Notre Dame and Louisville, Miami. I mean, it is what it is. I'm of the camp that I'm just not sure fans should be in the stands. I hate saying that because I know what a difference it makes on so many levels. I just think if you can have less people in there, there's less risk. And, you know, when it's a little bit safer and there are fewer risks to have fans in the stands, that's when I think you bring them back in. But that's just my opinion. I know, you know, if these teams want to try to do that, that's on them. But there's just a lot going on with that.
So, final thing, you know, when we were talking about the CFP and the different number of games, and we're waiting here on the Pac-12, is there anybody worth mentioning in the CFP discussion from the Pac-12 this year?
I think we're going to have a really good team, and they caught a break because they don't play Ohio State.
Yep.
You know, they've got Kayvon Thibodeau, Justin Flo on defense. Mario Cristobal's done a really good job recruiting. I think they would be the team to watch if they went 7-0. You know, last year they were a couple minutes away from beating Auburn, and then they lose at Arizona State, or they might have been in the playoff last year. That was a pretty good Oregon team that won the Rose Bowl. So I think they would be the one to watch if the Pac-12 gets back in the mix and maybe join that list, a group of teams that I told you earlier, but the usuals, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State monopoly.
So even though LSU, like half their team is in the NFL now, and their quarterback is gone, LSU still, well, what is LSU this year? Are they still a title contender?
I mean, they still have players. They've got a really good tight end that they're excited about. They've got maybe the best defensive player in the country in Derek Stingley, Jabril Cox, North Dakota State transfer. They've still got that 4- and 5-star talent, but I almost look at them as they got a little bit of a honeymoon, and I know they would never accept that at LSU, but coming off that team, like you said, all the coaching staff changes, all the players that went to the NFL, Jamar Chase opted out. They're going to have their work cut out for them if they want to repeat. I don't think any national champion that I can remember has lost as much as they have.
Bill Bender joining us, talking a little college football. He is with the Sporting News. Bill, thanks for giving us some time on the show this morning, and enjoy all the games this weekend.
Yeah, hey, Will. Thanks for having me on. Let's do this again soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. That is Bill on our Wester Hotline. And we were talking, you know, with Bill about the SEC. They're back in full force. I said it earlier. I mean, it just... My Saturdays, I'll bet a lot of you do the same thing. You wake up, you maybe get some stuff out of the way, get some work done, get everything done early morning. You know, Sunday, you're not getting anything done. It's all day NFL. And for me, Saturday is, that's okay. The one, I can't even say nice thing about working these crazy hours. Usually you can't sleep in on weekends. So I'm typically up like by 6 a.m. So I want to make sure I get everything done, because when ESPN gets into game day, I lock in on that. I see a little pregame hype. I watch all that stuff. Of course, I got to get Corso's, you know, headgear pick. And then it's noon football all day long. And it just, I've watched a little bit. You know, I saw a little bit of Syracuse Pitt. I'm trying to think what other games. I mean, I've been in and out of just a handful of games. A little bit of Miami. I watched the U a couple times. I mean, it just, but it has not felt the same. Saturdays just didn't feel the same without three of the Power Five leagues. And for that matter, if you're a fan of UB, I mean, no MAC games on Saturdays. No UB football. And UB's supposed to be good this year. They might win the MAC. We didn't see that either. So it just hasn't felt right to me. It just hasn't felt like it was really college football season with the SEC back. Now, the Big Ten doesn't play until, I'm trying to remember, it was either mid-October or maybe the third weekend in October. If the Pac-12 votes to come back, they're talking about late October or possibly later than that, like a really truncated season beginning in November. The MAC could vote this weekend to get back. Maybe a six-game season beginning the weekend of October 24th. But you look at it now and you see Oklahoma's playing in the Big 12, of course, but Oklahoma's playing. But look at the SEC, Florida and Ole Miss, Kentucky, Auburn, pair of top 25 teams. You know, there's the stalwarts. I'm going to guess Saturday night Alabama's not going to have a lot of trouble beating Missouri. Georgia, Arkansas, we talked about LSU. Bill mentioned LSU, 3:30 in that wonderful 3:30 CBS SEC spot. It's LSU and Mississippi State. So good. It feels like it's getting back to normal. As I said, it's not there yet when the Big Ten plays, you know, and Ohio State is back and all the Big Ten. I mean, Ohio State's the one team that really has the legitimate shot in the Big Ten. When everybody else starts coming back here, even in a shorter season, it'll just feel like it's a little bit closer to normal, even with, you know, limited capacity in the stands. 803-0550 to join us, 888-552-550. We've been talking this morning about the Bills. Big surprise. The 2-0 start and what you feel good about with this team. There's a lot to get to there. And what concerns you might have going into the third game of the season against the Rams at the stadium. So we'll continue to take your calls on that, 803-0550 or 888-552-550. C tweeted in, "I feel good about this team. I feel good that this team seems to address their weaknesses in the offseason. What concerns me is the running game not quite getting off the ground yet and the overall injury bug in the NFL. I'm looking forward to getting Josh Norman in a few weeks." Well, a couple things on that. One, and I think everybody, you know, the whole list of concerns thing, let's face it, it's a short list. It's a pretty short list. I don't think you even need to use all the fingers on one hand, you know. But the top of the list for most of you, I'm going to guess, is Levi Wallace. He had a rough day against the Miami Dolphins. And Josh Norman, of course, is still on injured reserve. So let me start there. I think that is the top concern. But with Norman, he will miss this game. He can't play. He's not eligible to come off injured reserve until after the Rams game, after the third game of the season. We'll see what happens. Sean McDermott was asked about Norman this week. Where is he at physically and all that? He didn't really want to get into it. He said he just wanted to talk about players that were playing Sunday. Norman isn't. So maybe we'll get a little better handle on that next week. And we'll see if Norman is A, healthy, and B, comes in and goes into a starting role, or maybe they kind of ease him back in. Remember last year when Levi Wallace was having some issues, they worked in Kevin Johnson, and they had a little bit of a rotation going there. So maybe Norman coming off the injury, assuming they do believe he is the better option, I'm not sure that he hops in right away and gets all the snaps. Maybe they work him in a rotation and then see essentially who wins the competition. That's what August was about. And then Josh Norman got hurt. So you might see that once he gets back from IR. I think Wallace is really the top concern. But, you know, the running game, it's kind of funny. Sal and I were talking about this morning. He asked me, he said, are you worried about the running game? And I concerned about the running game. We're talking about different concerns. I said, no, not yet. I mean, it was not good against the Jets. Josh was good, but the running backs were not productive against the Jets at all. It was a little better in Miami. I mean, yards per carry, again, I think it was over five for Moss and Singletary. So it was better. But here's the thing with the running game, okay? I think part of the whole Like, they weren't bad in Miami, but they're throwing the ball. Like, the if we're looking for like the running game to drive this offense, maybe you were. That's not the case. This is a passing-based offense. I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but it is. The Bills are throwing the ball. There was a stat. Hang on a second. Let me get this. I think I got this right anyway. So this is from Sports Info Solutions. They had a whole bunch of stats they had tweeted out. How Josh is throwing under pressure. He's attempted the most passes under pressure. Pretty good, too. 20 of 31, 404 yards, 5 TDs, no picks. Good. The next stat they had was the Bills have dropped back on 63% of first down plays. 43 passes, 25 runs. They are throwing the ball on first down. They are throwing the ball to build a lead. They are throwing the ball with the lead. To me, as I said, so the running game, I think it's a little bit of a misnomer. Yes, the running backs were bad against the Jets. They were better against the Dolphins, but you might not notice it because the identity of the offense is to throw the ball. The passing game has really gone up a big step here with the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, they threw 46 times against the Jets, career high for Josh. They didn't throw that. They threw 35, I think, for Josh in attempts against the Dolphins. But how did they win the game? Through the air. Not with the running game. Josh didn't even run that much, right? He had, I think, maybe one design run. It's the fourth quarter. They're playing from behind. They're down three. They're throwing the ball. They take the lead. They're throwing the ball. They're not feeding it to Moss and Singletary and go extra tight ends and run clock and, you know, play it safe. They're attacking downfield. So don't freak out about the running game. I think Singletary is very talented. We're waiting to see Moss have some breakthrough runs like we saw from Devin Singletary early last season. But I also think the running game has taken a back seat to the passing attack, which is a good thing because of Josh Allen's improvements and because of the depth of the wide receivers, the people in the passing game they can use. And, you know, throwing the tight ends, throwing the running backs. Because of the depth of weapons, I think the running game has kind of taken a back seat right now. Mortimer and Clarence, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Yes, good morning. I just enjoy your show so much. But the only concern I have is the edge rush. I really think that our edge rush is a little bit lacking right now. And I was sort of hoping the number two draft pick we got would have helped us out.
I think he will at some point. I mean, he played the other day. Mortimer, thanks for the call. A.J. Epenesa got in. He was inactive in game one. I know that kind of, I don't know, freaked out is probably too strong a word, but maybe some raised some eyebrows how he wouldn't be dressed and active for the first game. Darrell Williams was. But they went with five defensive ends in Miami. And Epenesa, I think Sal mentioned he got more snaps than Darrell Johnson this last game. So don't worry about it. I think in time, if you have guys like Addison and Trent Murphy, who again closed last year strong, and I'm glad he is back on this team. Addison, Murphy, you got Hughes. I think we'll see. I couldn't tell you about Epenesa yet. That remains to be seen. You have enough of a presence, I think, on the edge that I wouldn't worry about the pass rush. I mean, they are getting some sacks. Addison, I think, got his the other day from defensive tackle. The first one against the Jets, I believe he would have rushed from the outside. They have ability to rush from the outside. I also thought this past Sunday, Fitz did a really good job of getting the ball out. You know, if you're facing the Bills, we'll see how Jared Goff does this, although they like to run the ball. But you really, no quarterback. In this day and age, what's changed so much around the league? Release times. How quickly quarterbacks are getting the ball out. It's putting a lot of value on the cornerbacks, right? Because you could build up your line and you can have all these stud pass rushers, but if the other guy's getting the ball out in 2 seconds, teams have adjusted over the years. It's, you know, you don't stand back there in the pocket very long. Josh was able to do that the other day in Miami a few times because the offensive line gave him great protection. But a lot of teams have really emphasized to their quarterbacks, there's so many talented defensive linemen. You got to get that ball out. Negate the pass rush by getting it out on time. Make your read, get it out as soon as possible. Well, if you're going to do that, guess what? There's only so much you can do if you're Jerry Hughes or Mario Addison or Trent Murphy. You can only get to the quarterback so fast. I wouldn't worry about it. They're getting some sacks. If you're getting pressures, I mean, Sean McDermott talks about this. Leslie Frazier talks about it. I know in the offseason they did say, we want to get more sacks. We want to get to the quarterback. But at least affect the quarterback, right? The phrase is get him off his spot, get in his face, get in the passing lanes. Back downs are good. So I don't get as wrapped up in the sack stats. I think they are getting, they're generating pressure. And if you can just take some time and space away from that quarterback, I think they'll be okay. They have depth. One of the things I think, we didn't mention this when we talked about what's good so far, but because there's so much on the offensive side of the ball you think about. With linebackers, we're worried because Milano got hurt and Edmonds got hurt, and it brings up the fact that linebacker was probably the one position more than any other on this team where you would worry about the depth, lack of proven depth, lack of options. You might mention cornerback, but you know, you still have, you had Levi Wallace and Teron Johnson and Josh Norman and all that. Linebacker, the depth was extremely questionable. Hopefully, if they have to play Tyrell Dotson and A.J. Klein, they'll be okay Sunday against the Rams. But defensive line, they are loaded. That is deep. I mean, offensive line and defensive line, and that's not surprising because both the GM and the head coach, one of the things they believe in when building a roster is you build up front. They've both said it many times since they've been here. Build the lines. That's where you control games. They are really deep up front, both sides of the ball. Defensive line, they like to play the rotation. One, it's good because, you know, you'll keep guys fresh. Two, they would have done it the other day. It was hot in Miami. You know, it's going to be 80-ish, maybe just under 80 Sunday at the stadium. But they've got so much talent. Yeah, you rotate to have guys fresh and all this other stuff. And as Sean McDermott says, keep throwing fastballs at the offensive line with fresh players. But it's the ability all these guys have. As a group, there's no one stud guy. There's no Aaron Donald. There's no J.J. Watt. But as a group, with all of their attributes and their skill sets put together and the flexibility, the ability to move guys around. Hey, Mario Addison, go inside. Okay, whatever you need. The ability to move guys around side to side, inside, outside, and the depth of talent up front, they're in very good shape. Knock on wood. Even with the star opt-out, they're in very good shape on the defensive line. So don't worry about that. I think if there's a concern on defense, it's two things. One, Levi Wallace. And two, the linebacker depth, if Milano and or Edmonds remain out of the lineup. They both practiced on a limited basis yesterday. A little bit later, we'll get the updated injury report on whether they are practicing today. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550. What do you feel good about so far through the 2-0 start? What concerns you? We'll get, concerns, fantasy football owners, and all the injuries that happen in week two. We'll get through all of that. We'll talk about who to start, maybe in the Bills matchup with the Rams. You might want to be worried about starting. Anyway, our good buddy Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports coming up next for his fantasy update on WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
He's instinctive, makes plays on the ball. You know, we be jawing at each other every day in practice. I'll be telling him to get his hands on one. Then on the game day, I'm not surprised when he's around the ball or he gets his hands on the ball. I hold him to a high standard, too. I say, you owe me like two picks at this point. It's been two games, so I'm trying to get a pick a game. But he's been around the ball. He's been active. But I just say he's smart. He's instinctive. He knows what he's going to get. He's disciplined with his technique. And he got a knack for the ball. So finding corners that have a knack for the ball, it's always around the ball. They're hard to find. So
Stephon Diggs through two games, 22 targets, 16 catches, 239 yards, one touchdown. I'm going to work this into our conversation with our good buddy Scott Pienowski from Yahoo Sports because he joins us every Thursday, 9:30-ish. You know how we are on being on time. To talk fantasy football. And if you don't follow Scott on Twitter, you should, @Scott_Pienowski. And then you can read his article this week about his fantasy regrets. One name was on my list, but now I got to bring up the other. First off, Scott, it's Howard and Brayton. Good morning, sir. Happy Thursday.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Oh, please. The Bills are 2-0, and they're throwing the ball all over the field.
Yeah, I mean, right now, it's like, is Russell Wilson or Josh Allen the MVP? We gotta figure this out, right?
Let's just stop the season right there. I'm good with that. But you know, your article, I was going to ask you about Cam Newton. Well, I also need, of course, we're going to talk about all the injuries. But you did put up an article this week about the fantasy regrets through two games. And I'm pretty sure we talked about Diggs with you last week, and you made mention of him in your article.
Yeah. Newton's an interesting case because right now he's on pace to have over 200 rushing attempts. And this is not somebody who, you know, tries to run out of bounds or slides. They treat him like a running back. He's like Marshawn Lynch. He gets tackled by the heaviest guys in the defense. And I don't know if that's necessarily sustainable for full season, but he looks terrific. He's their goal line back. And he also almost threw for 400 yards in that game against Seattle. And Edelman had the best game of his career yardage-wise. So they've done a great job. I tip my cap to Belichick and Josh McDaniels. Remember, they didn't get Newton until July in a very unusual and truncated offseason. He's looked very good. And with Diggs and with DeAndre Hopkins, the history tells us that there's acclimation time for receivers on new teams. And I thought, unusual offseason, they're not going to play any preseason games. They didn't have, you know, spring OTAs. I wasn't sure if Diggs and Hopkins would be guys that maybe we should focus on next year. Not that they wouldn't be good players, because they're super talented players, but you had to pay a lot for them at a draft table. I thought maybe they were going to be overpriced, and God, does that look totally foolish now. And you know, Diggs also, that also speaks to just how well, and you guys don't need to be told this, how well Josh Allen is playing and how aggressive that offense has been. And I cannot wait to watch this Bills-Rams game, two teams that are 2-0. Sean McVay has been really hot. He's got a couple of running backs who have played well in the first 2 weeks, and Tyler Higbee had the 3-touchdown game last week after the blow-up December that he had. So this is one of the signature games of the week. So it was a really great game. I mean, the Monday night game, you can't beat that with the Ravens and Chiefs. So I'm really excited to get it going. But, you know, when I wrote about the regrets that I have, and I tried to spin some things forward, what you can do, I do think it's a good time to maybe try to trade Edelman just because he's never really been a big touchdown guy, and he doesn't even play in their goal line packages generally. So I think touchdowns might be a problem for him. But the great thing about fantasy, you have to embrace it, is you're just going to, or football in general, is you're going to be wrong a lot. And to be successful, all you really need to be is just right a little bit more often than the people next to you and the people you're competing with. Yeah, if you could pick 55 or 56% against the spread, you'd be a god. You know, the break even for spread picks is 52.38%, assuming 10% vigorous. So you're going to be wrong a lot. You accept it. You try to learn from it. You try to be own your mistakes, which I do try to do. And I try not to be a big victory lap guy. When I get something right, I don't want to stuff it down people's throats. I don't think people generally enjoy that. But it's football, man. It's been a really exciting 2 weeks. They're kind of going hands off on holding. There's been a lot of scoring, and you know, whatever that is. I would prefer that maybe it didn't turn into the Big 12, but it's been a fun 2 weeks. And
but the Big 12 is fun. It's fun to watch. It is entertaining football to watch, right? But now let me ask you.
I've had a blast. I'm having a ball, and I'm sure you guys are too. With the way Buffalo has started.
In all the years you've been playing and talking about fantasy football, what was last Sunday like? I mean, with the injuries with Barkley and McCaffrey and Sutton and Garoppolo and Tevin Coleman and Drew Lock. I mean, I can go on and on. What a disastrous day.
I can't remember a worse injury day than yesterday. We know football injuries are always going to be a big part of the story, but the consensus first two picks in fantasy, Barkley's out for the season, McCaffrey will be out several weeks, and it's frustrating. The whole team photo for San Francisco, it felt like they got hurt. Kittle didn't even start the game.
Yep.
They lose their quarterback. Mostert looked like he was in line for a fantastic season. They're hoping to get him back soon, but you never really know about stuff like that. So all you can do is just, you know, try to be respectful. These guys are players. You know, I know fantasy treats them as, you know, to some degree as commodities. We try to be sensitive to that and use terminology that's fair to the players. You know, these guys are human beings. So, you know, let's remember that first and foremost. And then you go scrambling to the waiver wire and try to figure out, is there a running back we want in San Francisco? Is it going to be more Wilson this week or more McKinnon this week or Jermichael Hasty off the practice squad? I think maybe Wilson leads the team in touches, but McKinnon will probably do more with his work. We saw the Giants sign Devonta Freeman. Mm-hmm. Is he have anything left in the tank? I know he's still in his 20s, but, I mean, he took a lot of hits in Atlanta. But what else do they really have, right? I mean, Deion Lewis probably at the end of his career. They didn't even dress Wayne Gallman last week, although I think he has some deep sleeper value. And then, you know, Carolina, Mike Davis, in a partial game, caught 8 passes. 7 of them were in the last 2 drives, so you can call that garbage time, but it still counts. It proves that he has some level of rapport with Teddy Bridgewater, and so I Mike Davis on a couple of my teams, I was putting in big money because he's going to get work. The thing with running backs that's clean for fantasy is that when a running back gets hurt, we know there'll be opportunity and somebody will step forward. It's not necessarily that clean at other positions. For example, when Michael Thomas gets hurt for the Saints, that doesn't mean that there's another Michael Thomas waiting to emerge. I mean, Tre'Quan Smith was okay in the Monday night game. He wasn't gigantic, but you know, he's worth owning, I guess. But with running back, there are touches. You know, McCaffrey's going to get 20 to 25 touches a week, maybe 30-some weeks. When he gets hurt, they have to distribute those to somebody, or at least a big chunk of them. So Mike Davis was one of the most sought-after free agents in Week 3, and he's rolling for a couple of my teams this week.
We're with Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports. Do you have Drew Brees on any of your teams? Whether you do or you don't, are owners of Drew Brees nervous? Should they be nervous after the first 2 weeks?
You know, I had one Drew Brees share, and I ended up trading him. It's in a super flex league where you basically need to play 2 quarterbacks. And he was my second quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater was my third quarterback. One of my opponents in that league, Andy Behrens, who's a colleague at Yahoo. Yeah. He had quarterback injury problems. He wanted to trade for Bridgewater, and we ended up making a package deal where I felt more comfortable trading Brees. He gave me a little bit more for Brees, but I'm concerned. You know, even with Brees getting over 300 yards, again, Jarvis Stein was his friend in that Monday game. He was only the quarterback 22 last week. Doesn't seem comfortable throwing the ball downfield. He's taken a lot of checkdowns. Now, you know, granted, sometimes those checkdowns are to Alvin Kamara. He's a dynamic player. Jared Cook is still fantasy viable. They're hoping to get Thomas back in a few weeks. But I ranked Brees outside the top 20 last week, and then, you know, it seemed to be the right thing to do because he was quarterback 22. We see all these young quarterbacks are running, a lot of them anyway. You know, Allen, the big part of his value. It's a big part of Lamar Jackson's value. And even there's guys like Patrick Mahomes, who isn't proactively a runner, but he can do it if it needs to be done. Dak Prescott, what, 3 rushing touchdowns in that game against Atlanta. He had none of that with Brees. He'll occasionally run in one at the goal line, but it's not his game. And I don't think he's got a downfield element. And I think Sean Payton's scripting away from that. I don't think it's going to be as bad as the last Peyton Manning season, but I do think this is going to be the final season of Drew Brees' career.
Yep.
If you were to ask me to project what his fantasy rank will be at the end of the year, I think it's going to be like 18 or 20 or 22, inconsequential in a lot of fantasy leagues.
On the topic of quarterbacks, I'm wondering, Scott, with now Justin Herbert got a start, looked good. He's going to start. There's no timetable for Tyrod Taylor off the punctured lung. With a guy like Herbert, as opposed to Joe Burrow, who everybody knew, pretty much knew he was going to be the starter, with Justin Herbert, with Tua Tagovailoa, were they must draft in leagues? Would you have drafted those guys thinking at some point they're going to play? Because now if you have Herbert, you're getting productivity out of him pretty early.
You're very format dependent. In a league where only one starter was required, I'm sure Burrow would have been drafted, but the other guys wouldn't have. But in leagues that are becoming more popular, in superflex leagues or in two quarterback leagues, they become valuable. And then if you play DFS, the thing about playing somebody like Herbert is he's not as expensive as the top tier quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So you think maybe you're getting value there, and that allows you to buy up at the other positions. I was pleasantly surprised at how well Herbert played. I don't know. It's been positive both ways. Is it a blessing or a curse when you're just throwing the keys to the car right before the game? On one hand, I could see him being really nervous. On one hand, maybe he just goes out there with, you know, kind of his hair on fire and not worried about it.
Yeah.
But he looked the part. I mean, he had that one bad interception, right. But he was aggressive downfield. He was physical. There's one play where he was running the ball and you worry about the quarterback getting hit. He dished out the punishment to the defender. He's a big kid. And I know that Anthony Lynn wants to be respectful of Tyrod Taylor. The guy was hospitalized. You want to be mindful of these guys as players, as I said earlier. But I don't see, with Herbert on his rookie contract and with him not, the moment not being too big for him week two, I think they have to play him the rest of the season and see what happens. Let's figure out if he's their guy. That's one of the things you need to do with young players, you know, on that first contract, to figure out if you want a second contract. So I think he's going to be their quarterback the rest of the year, and there's good pieces, right? Keenan Allen we like. Hunter Henry's a good tight end. Austin Eckler, they haven't thrown the ball to him as much this year, but he's one of the best pass-catching running backs in the league, and they have a decent defense that really made the Chiefs look bad for about three quarters. Nobody ever does that. So there's a lot of pieces around Justin Herbert that can make him successful. I don't know what Lynn's going to do, and maybe a lot of it depends on how well Herbert plays against the Panthers this week, but I think he should be their starter the rest of the season.
Scott, real quick, why don't I ask you about tonight's game? Obviously, looking at it on paper with Dolphins-Jaguars, doesn't look like a sexy matchup on paper, but when you look at the fantasy pieces that are involved in this game, there's plenty of respectable players that are going to be playing tonight and that could produce a good amount of points for your fantasy squads. I mean, is there anybody in particular that you're looking at in tonight's matchups or anybody that you're kind of keying in on to maybe be a nice producer for you for any of your lineups there?
I'm excited for this game. If Gardner Minshew was the first or second round pick, I think everybody would be over the moon for him because he wasn't an early pick. Maybe that story isn't, I mean, people talk about him because he's a fun guy. He's got the mustache and everything, but I think he's just a good football player and he's going to play in this league for 10 years. Both teams have running backs who didn't have a lot of draft capital. James Robinson was undrafted. Miles Gaskin, despite being a four-year starter at Washington, was a seventh-round pick. Robinson looks great. I think Gaskin could be a really good fantasy player if they just commit to him. It's been a three-headed monster in Miami, but I think he's the guy that you want. And Mike Gesicki, this is one of my favorite angles, okay? He's the tight end in football who's getting the most slot reps, and that's what we want when possible with our tight ends in fantasy. It's great that Kittle's a great blocker. Gronkowski was a great blocker for years. Travis Kelce, all that. But with Mike Gesicki, I don't want him blocking. I don't want his hand on the ground. I want him in the slot being treated as a jumbo receiver. And that's what Norv Turner is doing. Gesicki, about, I think, 65%, 70% of the time, he's in the slot. He's a glorified receiver. They have a lot of injury problems with their wideouts. I think Gesicki's going to lead that team in receptions and receiving yards. I think he's a really good play in week three at tight end. It's been a great tight end year so far. We've seen a lot of emergences. Jonnu Smith, Noah Fant looks like a star. I think if the Hawkinson's usage goes up a little bit in Detroit, he's going to be terrific. But watch Gesicki tonight and watch the running backs. I think they all offer a lot of fantasy juice.
Yeah, we saw enough of Gesicki last week, so I'm good for now. He was scary
good. Right.
The website, sports.yahoo.com. They've got great fantasy information there. Follow Scott on Twitter. It is @Scott_ Pianowski. Thank you, as always, Scott, for giving us some time. Good luck to all of your teams this weekend.
Good to talk to you guys.
All right, Scott, have a nice weekend. We will wrap the show when we get back. Instigators, of course, coming up top of the hour on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, here you go. Here's your plan for tonight. Sorry, I won't go that fast. The Thursday Night Football, Miami, Jacksonville, 8:20, NFL Network, and right here on WGR. Your NBA game, no NHL tonight. Your NBA game is Lakers-Denver, 9 o'clock on TNT. And the Jays are at Salem Field with a chance to clinch a playoff spot against the New York Yankees. That is a 6:37 first pitch. What do we got, like 20 seconds, 10 seconds? What do we got, 20? All right. Hey, quick heads up. Really good story on Stephon Diggs by Jordan LaBarber at Bills.com. Really fascinating insight. He talked to high school coaches, coaches at Maryland, Adam Thielen, really good read. Give it a chance when you get, or take it a look at it when you get a chance. Join us tomorrow morning at 6 for Football Friday. Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.